It's Here and Now, and I'm broadcasting today from New York City, home of the largest subway system in the United States. 468 stations, more than 6,000 subway cars, and a record 6 million daily riders. I'm here at the Bowling Green Station in Lower Manhattan, and I'm joined by the chairman of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority, Thomas Prendergast. Chairman Prendergast, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here.
Now, when I look out here and see what we're seeing, I see a lot of people going to work. What do you see when you see this?
I see the most heavily traveled line in the MTA network, 500,000 people a day, doing its job, making sure people can get to work and get home and move around New York City, which is vital to them.
But when you say heavily traveled, are you saying it's overcrowded?
It's getting to the point where it's overcrowded. I think the original design of the Lexington Avenue line was one in which it never anticipated this level of customers. For the first time ever, in October of 2013, we saw 6 million people on the system. We had 29 days in 2014 where 6 million people used the system. So the system, when it was first designed, especially this part of it, at the turn of the 19th to the 20th century, never anticipated this level of customers.
Well, how did it get to that point then? Why over the decades hasn't there been more development and more additional lines put in?
Well, there was. I mean, a lot of the growth of the subway occurred in the early part of the 20th century, but the overwhelming majority of the construction was done by the 1940s. Ridership reached its peak right around World War II, but with the advent of the automobile and people buying more cars, ridership started to fall. That started to come back in 1982 when we invested in our first $8 billion capital program. Once we got the state of good repair fixed and we actually offered value pricing, discount pricing with the MetroCard, people came back and they came back in droves.
But there weren't additional lines to meet that capacity.
The first need had to be to bring the system back to a state of good repair. And they didn't want to take on additional debt with construction of new lines. As a matter of fact, that's what kind of put the system in chaos in the 60s and 70s when they were doing new construction but not doing state of good repair. So we had to come back and fix the state of good repair, but now we're in the mode for expansion because it's badly needed.
And you mentioned discount metro cards. There are a lot of people who ride this subway every day who are upset because the fares just recently went up again.
Yes, but we still believe for the value of what they get, it's still good. We're very sensitive to the cost of the ride for the people because the subway system is the great equalizer. Anybody in any part of the economic strata can use the subway, and they do use the subway, and that's what makes New York attractive to people to come to work and live.
You have said that the subway needs to remain an economical alternative for people. If it becomes too expensive, it doesn't work.
That's correct. I mean, if it gets to the point where people cannot afford to use it, we're hurting ourselves. Many people don't realize the most sustainable part of the United States, if you define the sustainability in the amount of a carbon footprint one person has, it's the smallest carbon footprint here in New York because of the 8.5 million people who use the MTA system on an everyday basis.
Well, let's get back to the traffic as we watch a lot of people get off a train that has just come into the station. You are expanding for the first time in about 50 years, the biggest expansion of the MTA in that time period, the Second Avenue subway. Is it still on track to open late next year?
Yes, the first phase of Second Avenue will open on December 31st of 2016. And that particular project will grant relief to what you're seeing here. There are many people who ride the Lexington Avenue line north of 96th Street who will avail themselves of the 2nd Avenue subway, and that will offload the capacity constraints we have here right now on the Lex line.
You say the Lex line. This is the only line that really goes all the way up the east side of Manhattan.
That's correct. I mean, the first bond issue for 2nd Avenue subway was back in the 1930s because they recognized the need to have more part of the subway system east of Madison. But it's taken us until this time to actually get that first phase of the Second Avenue subway completed.
The question, though, is do you think it's going to alleviate the problems on the 4, 5, and 6 lines, or are people just going to say, oh, good, a new subway line and more riders will come aboard?
I honestly think it'll be both. And, you know, that's an interesting challenge to have because the more people we carry, the more we do to improve the environment and make New York a livable place and continue to make it a livable place, it's good. So it's good news. But we need to continue the Second Avenue subway all the way down to Hanover Square. And we need to add capacity in the form of communication-based train control so we can actually run more trains per hour on the existing lines we have.
How long is it going to take to get all the way down to Hanover Square? We know that the first section of the line is just about done. The next section has actually already been dug, right, between 86th and 125th.
Yes, but it's going to take decades. I mean, it's to go from 96th Street all the way down to Hanover Square will take a number of projects and a number of years, actually measured in decades.
And how do you make sure that over that time, whether you're the chairman or not at that point, that they don't decide, you know what, the easiest thing for us to cut out of the budget is the Second Avenue subway line. Let's just put it into upgrading our existing lines.
I think we need to keep the pressure and the focus on that you need to do both. I don't think we can do expansion at the expense of state of good repair. State of good repair has got to come first, but we can't say just state of good repair and no expansion. So we need to keep the pressure on both. The major global cities that are financial centers, London, Paris, Hong Kong, Tokyo, New York, are all making expenditures in their transportation infrastructure. Crossrail in London, £14 billion, because they want to maintain their role as one of the key financial centers in the world. We need to do the same.
When you get on one of those subway systems in one of those cities, are you envious, or do you think, oh, we're doing it better than they are?
It's a combination of both. You always compare yourself against the best in class. You try to see who is performing the best and how do you match that service. In other areas, we're the best in class. Nobody has 468 stations. On one hand, it's a challenge. On the other hand, 71% of the New York City population lives within 1.5 miles of a subway station. That's an envious position for other systems to be in. But it's costly because you have to maintain 468 stations, some of which are over 100 years old.
Earlier this year, you and the governor took some heat for closing the subway down for snow. And it turned out that the storm wasn't what you all had expected it would be. If you were faced with that again, would you do the same thing? Would you shut the system down?
Most likely, yes. What we try to do is get the best information we can. But as you know, weather forecasting is not an exact science. I have had in my career experiences, early in my career in Chicago in 1978, where we tried to run through a snowstorm and we lost over half the fleet. You saw similar experiences like that up in Boston this year, and I'm not being critical. But the issue to decide to shut the system down and protect the equipment and the infrastructure from the ravages of a storm so that once the storm clears, the system's able to run again is a fairly sound strategy.
So you would do it again?
Yes.
Is there any lesson that any other subway system in the United States could learn from what happens here in New York, or is it really apples and oranges because they just don't have the same density?
It's all relative, okay? We're the largest city in the country, but in Chicago, in San Francisco, in Atlanta, and Washington, D.C., although they're smaller, the importance of the system to the region in relative terms is the same. For the first time ever, about 5 years ago, 8 years ago, more of the world's population lived in urban centers than rural centers. And so these are challenges all urban areas have to deal with going forward.
I want to ask you about safety, because there have been some issues, especially on the Metro North in recent years. How do you upgrade the safety there and stop those kinds of things from happening?
We've come to a point in time where we have to make sure we have technological systems in place to take over if human failure occurs. It's pretty clear in the case of the Spuyten and Duyvil accident that there was a locomotive engineer, for whatever reason, was not in control of the train. It derailed at 80 miles an hour. So we need to have positive train control. On the subway side, it's communication-based train control. And the decision was made to go to that after a bad, horrific accident on August 28, 1991 at 14th Street. We need to have systems in place that assure the safety of the riding public in the event an employee, for whatever reason, doesn't do his or her job.
Is it better right now to have a driver in charge of the train or a computer in charge of the train? As we have when we're at, let's say, JFK, and you take that air train, there's no driver on that train.
I operated a system in Vancouver with a SkyTrain system. It was automated from day one, one of the best safety records in the industry. The AirTrain, as you mentioned, is a totally automated system, and it's very safe. It's a matter of it can be manual operation, automatic operation, or totally driverless operation. You need to have principles and concepts and designs in place to be able to protect for the safety. One's not safer than the other.
How has Uber impacted the MTA?
I think Uber's impacted more of the other car ride and taxi services than us. There are certain elements of the city or certain sections of the city that we cannot provide service. It's not dense enough. It's too far off the network. The bus system isn't frequent enough. And so they fill those voids. Uber is one of those that fill those voids. But we see them as a complementary fit to what we do, not as a direct threat.
Nobody's taking Uber instead of taking the subway.
On rare occasions, if there is a time constraint or they need to go somewhere and they're wearing a tux and they don't want to be able to ride the subway, absolutely.
I wore a suit the other day in the subway. Is that wrong to do?
No, not a suit, but I don't know if you'd wear a tux.
Maybe not a tux. Thomas Prendergast, chairman of the Metropolitan Transportation Authority in New York City. And let us know whether your city's public transit system is getting the investment it needs at hereandnow.org.